Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovec. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the worlds of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News. Tim and I mentioned some of the headlines that are out there. We mentioned the FDA authorizing Pfizer's COVID booster for 16 and 17-year-olds, some warnings from the New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio concerned about hospitals. And the thing is, Tim, we know that this variant, right, is not as virulent, but
right.
We are seeing it's more contagious.
I want to be careful. We don't know at this point.
Okay. Folks have told us that.
Exactly. Yeah. And indications seem to be pointing in that direction. But we're still at a point, from my understanding, that we're waiting on the data to come in.
Right. We do need more data. That's a good point. The thing is, we are concerned about the stresses on our system, whether it's our medical and healthcare system, which we've definitely seen already around the world. Meantime, we did mention a study showing the Omicron variant 4.2 times more transmissible than the Delta variant in its early stages. And again, that's based on data that we were getting out of South Africa. So let's get to it with our guest. Dr. Kasar Talat is with us. She is Associate Professor of International Health. She's got an expertise in infectious disease and diseases and international health at the Bloomberg School of Public Health, supported by Michael R. Bloomberg, founder of Bloomberg LP and Bloomberg Philanthropies. She joins us on the phone from Tacoma Park, Maryland. Dr. Talat, good to have you here on Bloomberg Radio. How are you?
Very well, thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. When you get up in the morning and you want to know what the top headlines are when it comes to the pandemic, what are the things that you're most looking out for?
I'm looking for the number of cases, how quickly they're going up or whether they're coming down, also the number of deaths. I'm looking to see how fast the Omicron variant is spreading and how many countries, and also looking to see any vaccine news. So it was very exciting today that the FDA authorized the booster for 16 and 17-year-olds.
So what would you advise 16 and 17-year-olds who have gotten two shots? Would you say, hey, go out and get a booster as soon as you can?
I think it honestly depends on their risks. So if they are living in a state where because most 16 and 17-year-olds haven't been vaccinated for as long just because they weren't an initial priority group. So if they were living in a state where they have really high transmission rates and the cases are going up very quickly and they're going to school, they're maybe going to work. Often they, kids are in service jobs where they're forward facing with the public. I would say it would be something to think about. If they don't have a lot of risk factors, they don't live with somebody who's necessarily immunocompromised, they could probably wait because, at 16 and 17, your immune system is amazing. Mm-hmm. And so they've had a very good response to the original two doses of vaccine.
I always wonder, too, and maybe because I feel like, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. And I guess I bring that up because, you know, if I go back a year ago, I think we all thought we would be, we're in a much better place, no doubt about it. A lot of vaccines have gone out. I'm back at work regularly, so are a lot of my colleagues. Restaurants are open. You can go in and out of stores. But I do think we thought, okay, we would be out of this. We're learning a hard lesson in real time. What is it that we need to keep in mind about that? And maybe what it tells us about our future.
I think what we need to keep in mind is that nobody is safe until we're all protected. Mm-hmm. And so we live in a very, very connected world. And so until everybody in the world is vaccinated, we're going to keep seeing variants arising. And so just vaccinating the United States and people in the United States over and over again isn't going to protect us from the development of these variants. I do want to actually caveat something I just said about 16 and 17-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
The FDA has authorized the boosters, but the CDC has not yet met to recommend them.
Got it.
So right now I would not recommend that they get it because it's not available to them. But if the CDC Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices meets and recommends it, then it would be something to consider.
Right. There's that whole process. And yeah. No, we get caught up in it, too. It's like, wait, it's approved. Wait, no, wait, because there's multiple
not quite
steps.
Yet.
As we remind everything, it's all happening in front of us, and we're learning a lot along the way. You know, I guess what's interesting, too, is I often wonder, can COVID 19, can it just burn itself out? Can it just die out?
I don't think it's going to die out. But okay. What we all hope for is it will eventually become a milder and milder illness as we all acquire immunity, hopefully through vaccination. But unfortunately, many people in the world are acquiring immunity through repeated natural infections. And as we see in South Africa, you know, natural infection isn't enough to protect you against reinfection with new variants. And so it's really important to get the vaccine, even if you've had COVID. I think the best we can hope for at this point is that it will become a cold virus.
So I wonder, you know, Tim and I were talking as we get into it, that one thing we are different from a year ago or so, or certainly at the start of all of this, is we do have vaccines. We do have treatments if you are hospitalized. We have a better understanding. We understand the value of masks and social distancing so that when there are flare-ups, we kind of know what to do. Having said that, shutdowns, working from home, social distancing again, is that something that you think we need to still respect and have as a constructive and productive part of that toolkit?
I think it would be a last resort, if we go through if we try to get people vaccinated and we encourage people to wear masks and we still see cases rising out of control and hospitalizations, the hospitals filling up and people not being able to access healthcare because there is no space in the hospital for them to be admitted for whatever medical problem they have. I think then that's something that shutdowns need to be considered in order to protect the health of the public. There's so much that we can do to prevent those from happening, and vaccination's the number one thing that we can do.
Dr. Talat, I want to go back to something that you said earlier, the idea that unless we really vaccinate the world, we're going to continue to see variants emerge. Given, you know, what we've seen in the United States, is it kind of unrealistic to think that we can actually vaccinate the world? And this is going to turn into something like the flu, where we see new variants each and every year, and we have to get shots that are tailored toward those versions of the flu.
We may need to do that, but I think we vaccinate the world against a whole host of diseases. You know, the vast majority of people in the world are vaccinated against measles. Granted, we do that in children, young children, for the most part, but we are increasing our vaccinations for diseases such as HPV that we vaccinate adolescents for. So I think if there is a will, we can vaccinate the world. It might take a little bit of time, but vaccine manufacturers have the capacity to increase manufacturing. They should be sharing this technology with manufacturers in middle-income countries that are eager and able to make the vaccines, and we should be able to get vaccines into as many arms as possible.
Do you think we could get to a point where this could be the type of vaccine that we could give children and we can actually eradicate it in a way that we've only eradicated truly one disease?
it's very hard to eradicate a respiratory virus. It is possible. It takes a tremendous amount. I mean, as we see, we've only eradicated successfully one human disease completely, smallpox. We're very close on a couple of others, but it's the effort is tremendous. I'm hoping that we get to a point where this is a flu-like illness or a cold-like virus, where it doesn't cause as much severe disease as it is now. But that's going to take time, and it's going to take a concerted political will from everybody to make sure that we're all protected.
You know, I also do wonder, it's interesting, earlier today for the Bloomberg Sustainable Business Summit, I caught up with Sanda Ogiambo over at the United Nations, the Global Compact. She's head of that. And she talked about the importance of it and said, basically, until we are able to get access to vaccines globally, we will not ever be able to say we are truly free or safe from COVID. Having said that, it just reminds me about the importance of global collaboration at a time where we're seeing strained relations between companies, most notably the U.S. and China. Does that worry you going forward?
So I'm not a political scientist, but yes, I mean, every time there is distrust, there is going to be a lack of willingness to share information freely across borders, and for diseases such as for viruses and transmission, it is so important for the information to be shared as quickly as possible so that the world is aware of what's happening. I mean, South African scientists should be commended and applauded for sharing that information so quickly to set off the alarm about the Omicron variant. And we want to encourage that. And when we have free and open exchange of ideas, it makes things much easier. And political stresses can sometimes interfere with that.
All right. We're going to leave it on that note. Thank you so much. We really appreciate your time today. Dr. Kassar Talat, Associate Professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, of course, supported by Michael R. Bloomberg, founder of Bloomberg, Bloomberg LP and Bloomberg Philanthropy. She's joining us on the phone from Maryland. You know, these conversations, every day I kind of learn something, and I feel like we fine tune what we know about the virus, the spread, and how to deal with it.
And look, this is, you know, somebody who's studied Ebola and vaccines and Ebola vaccines and malaria vaccines and influenza. And she's optimistic that we could actually vaccinate the world against this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that comparison, that point that she makes when it comes to other things that we have certainly eradicated from the world, it's a reminder of what we can do.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Business Week, the cover story, also happens to be among the most read on the Bloomberg today. And Tim, it's also the Bloomberg Big Take.
Yeah, it's all about one vaccine to rule them all. I couldn't help but think of some sort of like, you know, Lord of the Rings reference there. Is that Lord of the Rings?
I don't know. Right?
One vaccine to rule them all? One ring to rule them all?
It is. Oh, okay. And the story, though, is a little bit more nuanced than that.
That voice that you're hearing is none other than Joel Weber, editor at Bloomberg Business Week. He joins us in the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio, along with Bob Langrith, healthcare reporter for Bloomberg News, also with us in the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio. Bob's story is the cover of the new issue of Bloomberg Business Week magazine. It's available on newsstands, online, and at Bloomberg.com/businessweek.
What's interesting about this story is you talk about this idea for a super vaccine to really beat Delta, Omicron, and more. But there's a lot more going on here, Joel, about whether or not indeed it will get done. It's not just a science story or medical story. It's also an economic story.
It's all of that. But what we're ultimately talking about here isn't about just a booster or even anything that's specifically about COVID, although it could solve it. But there is a very, very, very early science that suggests that we could actually be able to develop something that looks like a pan-coronavirus. So that would account for not just COVID, but remember MERS, remember SARS, even the common cold. And again, let me underscore this, early science. And if this plays out a little bit, though, knowing what we know now about being able to develop vaccines, it might not be so much that the science would be the thing that would hold us back so much as the economics of it all, right? So Bob, take us to Singapore, where the science part of the science is coming from.
Yeah, so we begin the story with a lead of one of the kind of world's top bat coronavirus experts. A guy named Lin Fei Wang in Singapore has been studying bat-borne viruses for decades, and one that led the team that discovered that SARS, that was one of the coronavirus deadly coronavirus epidemic in 2003. He discovered that came from bats, so when the pandemic started to happen. Early on, he had this idea that maybe some of these SARS survivors in Singapore had some kind of special antibodies that they could protect against COVID. He looked at them, it turns out they didn't. But then about a year later, you know, those survivors in Singapore, the original SARS, you know, started getting immunizations for COVID. And he had this idea, like, now they've kind of, this is this rare window into immune systems that have been exposed to two of these different, you know, epidemic strains of coronaviruses, and do they have some special cross-reactive antibodies? And he looked again, and they did. They had antibodies that protected against, like, five different coronaviruses that had never been in humans before.
Feels like a holy grail, almost.
Yeah, so that was one of the first signs that, like, this sort of thing might be possible. And he and about, you know, 10, 12, 13 other labs and a bunch of smaller biotechs are, you know, racing to work on this. But, you know, long term, the key question is if this continues to look promising, who's going to put up the money to do it, for the big kind of Manhattan Project to do it?
Pfizer and Moderna.
Oh, I don't know so about that. That was part of one of the most interesting parts of the story, I thought, is
that's fascinating.
You know, here we are with the Omicron variant making its way around the world, and the executives of these companies are being asked, are you working already on an Omicron variant shot? If they're giving us some sort of shot every 6 months to attack a new variant, that's money in their pockets. So incentives aren't necessarily aligned with them creating this shot to end all shots.
Oh, right. They have a thing, you know, that works right now, and they have a kind of a procedure they know that's probably going to work to make something for a new variant, at least for, you know, we don't know how long these things are going to work. That's one thing. And then if new variants keep coming, you know, even with mRNA, which is faster than other vaccine technologies, you're still scrambling to keep up. You still got a virus that races ahead of things. So, you know, so the riskier thing, but it could pay off, would be to put in a lot of money, a big Manhattan-style research project by someone to see if this universal thing is really possible. But someone has to put big bucks behind it if the research continues to be promising.
Well, the other thing here is, like, there's big bucks, and there's some of that, right? NIH has put some of that in there. But there's even, like, potentially different technologies, right? Like, we've all come to understand mRNA is one thing, but nanoparticles?
Yeah, so that's one of the new
ones. Blew my mind, Bob. Tell me more.
Yeah, that's like the next generation, like, vaccines. So the idea behind these nanoparticle vaccines, which is one of the main technologies they're pursuing for kind of pan or coronavirus shots, is that you have a little kind of virus-sized particle. It's either some sort of bacterial or kind of artificial protein, and you could sort of add on little different spike proteins or surface proteins from different coronaviruses kind of all over the top. So it looks like to the immune system, it looks like a virus with pieces of 10 different coronaviruses on top. And that in theory, might train the immune system to kind of generate cross-reactive antibodies against multiple coronaviruses. And that's what they're showing in these lab experiments, and it's mostly lab experiments. There's a few phase one human trials, but not many. That's what they're showing that may be happening in some of these early experiments. And yeah, so it's very intriguing.
Okay, so slow that down a little bit. It's a completely different technology. Some of it is being tested. It's very early. Little dongles hanging off there. Like what? How exactly does all of this stuff come together? If that technology bears out.
So I'm not exactly sure your question, but it's basically little you know protein balls to which you can just append like different spike proteins. So literally these are little cages and modular. And there's several other technologies they're pursuing. And the question, you've got to sort through these and, you know, see which ones are most promising and to go ahead with on a larger scale.
Bob, does the flu vaccines give us any insight into any of this?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So, you know, one thing we note in the story is that, you know, back in the 40s, when at the University of Michigan, there was a guy named Thomas Francis, and his protege was, you may have heard of him, Jonas Salk.
Heard of him.
And they developed some of the first flu vaccines. And early on with the flu vaccine, they thought, hey, these look highly promising. The results look really, really good, 70 to 90% efficacy. And, oh, yeah, there's some variants of the flu, but no problem. We'll get a handle on that by, you know, varying the flu strain from year to year. It was only until decades later that they realized that the efficacy of the flu vaccine was mediocre. So the flu, you know, provides an example of how hard it is to get a handle on, you know, respiratory viruses with kind of annual vaccines.
It's a great story. There's so much going on. And just to understand how science is moving along on this and an understanding and maybe a breakthrough going down the road. It is the cover story of Bloomberg Business Week. It's the big take. It's among the most read. Bob Langreth, another great story. As we continue to go through this pandemic, all your stuff has always been a must read. Bob Langreth, healthcare reporter at Bloomberg News here in our Interactive Broker studio. Joel Weber, editor of Bloomberg Business Week magazine. He's in the kids' chair here in our studio.
Kid's chair in a suit that, you know, looks really good on a colleague, too.
All right. You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week. This is Bloomberg Radio.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
So one of the names that we've been watching today is Apple again, as it continues to grind. It's not really grinding higher today. It's just down about 0.2%. So a little changed.
But we're watching it so closely because it's almost hitting $3 trillion.
Yep. Right now it's at $2.867 billion. It's been a little bit above that, but it's gotten really close. we all are. Let's get to it, though, because there's some interesting stuff. Our Mark Gurman put out a story about Apple. Apparently, their company's self-driving car project, Tim, losing three key engineers.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, a lot of those engineers headed to other transportation startups. For this, we bring in Ed Ludlow, West Coast correspondent at Bloomberg News. He joins us now from our Los Angeles bureau in Southern California, no longer Northern California, where Ed's usually joining us from. Ed, a couple things stand out to me about this story. One is, you know, who actually left Apple, but also where they're going. Let's get to that in just a second. First, what do we know up to now about what Apple's doing when it comes to autos?
Well, just really quick, I mean, Carol, talking about $3 trillion, right? The reason that Morgan Stanley raised its price target at the beginning of the week is they said these future endeavors, future products like an Apple Car, just aren't priced into the stock. That's why we're paying such close attention, right? But this has been the main Apple Car story, not what they've done, but the sort of merry-go-round of executives. You know, their leader on the right radar front has departed for a startup. Radar, really important part of the sensor suite, which goes into autonomous technology. And we know from Mark Gurman's fantastic scoop last month, that is what Apple wants to do, right? They want to start with a fully autonomous vehicle, not sort of a normal car, and build up to it.
What's going on here? Is it just so much competition, Ed, for these individuals, this expertise in particular?
Yeah, everyone is finding this difficult. First of all, to decide what the product is. You know, if you think about Cruise, you know, the startup backed by General Motors, or Zoox, the self-driving arm of Amazon, they have got a very clear model. They're making this shuttle. It has no steering wheel, no pedals. You sit in it, multiple passengers facing each other. It's not a passenger car. Then you look at Waymo. Waymo's model has been to retrofit normal cars, and even though they have a steering wheel in the design, you know, take the driver away. And for a long time, that's been the story of Apple. They couldn't quite decide what it is they were building toward. Until last month, of course, when Mark Gurman reported they'd settled on this fully autonomous, no steering wheel, no pedals design. And it's basically a passenger shuttle. The question is, can Apple achieve that, right? They're not a car company.
Can Apple achieve that with these relatively high-level defections as well?
Yeah, it's really interesting because in all parts of the electric vehicle industry, which I use as an umbrella, right? I'm thinking of Rivians and Lucids and Teslas, all the self-driving specialists, the battle for talent is fierce. But it seems with Apple, they've brought in some really high profile people and those people haven't lasted very long. You know, Project Titan, you know, the special projects division of Apple has been working on this since 2014. There's been no consistency in leadership. And, you know, the highest profile example of that was Doug Field, right? Doug Field led the project for 3 years. He went to Ford this year to be their sort of chief technologist, which doesn't speak very much to Apple's progress, right?
Yeah. Hey, Ed, are these folks leaving Apple? Is it because they can get more money elsewhere, or is it because there's still some confusion, perhaps? I'm just throwing out a word in terms of the Apple Car project, because I feel like we've been talking about Apple Car for a long time.
Yes. It's a fantastic question. You know, we do have to read between the lines a little bit because Apple is so secretive. That's what Morgan Stanley said in their note. One reason the share price doesn't reflect the potential of an Apple Car, we don't know anything about it, but what we do know is that Kevin Lynch, who is kind of the leader of the Apple Watch and health software at Apple, has taken over ownership of this car project. So the departures, you know, reading, you know, the fantastic Bloomberg coverage and the names that have come and gone, it seems that with each turn Apple makes in a new direction of what this project actually is, that's where you see people move on. You know, no one doubts Apple's software expertise. I think that universally across Wall Street, across industry experts, people say, yep, Apple can get the software side of this done, what it takes from an AI perspective to achieve full autonomy. Where are their car expertise? Where are their expertise in the hardware like LiDAR, radar that goes into this project? And that seems to be where there's the highest turnover.
And interestingly enough, back to where we started, Ed, the high level, relatively high level defections, they're headed to flying taxi startups, air taxi startups.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the promise here when it comes to getting from one place to another, like an Uber with air, through the air, like an Uber for the air?
Get ready to cringe, guys. I can already feel your shoulders. This is the most Silicon Valley answer I'll ever give you. But lots of these people are mission-oriented, right? They're project-oriented. You know, there are people who were fantastically successful at Tesla, for example, and moved on. One of them moved on to Apple, for example. Many have moved on to Rivian because they take a thrill out of succeeding with a new product, bringing it to market. That's one answer, right? That they look at a new opportunity and say, I've been at Apple a few years, we've not made progress. I would love and to launch a flying electric taxi, air taxi. That's just nuts to say out loud, but it's true. You know, these are engineers with fantastic talent.
There's a point where getting on the moon was considered fantastical. And here we, you know, look at what we're doing right now. It's pretty remarkable. Ed Ludlow, we love you. Ed Ludlow's West Coast correspondent at Bloomberg News. Not in San Francisco today. He's in L.A.
That's because he's going to be live from the port tomorrow, Los Angeles and Long Beach. And he's going to bring us the latest on what's going on there.
Are those ships moving? Are we emptying them? Am I going to get my holiday gifts?
Is it related to inflation that we get tomorrow, that read?
Could be.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs.
The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization. We live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow. Did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann. Let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
I'm driving in my car.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no, 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 no. This is not a toy.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
You drive, stay in crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
You drive me crazy.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, folks, so just about 10 minutes left in today's trading session here on this Thursday. We've been bouncing around here on the equity averages, Doug, breaking it down. We're definitely off our best levels of the day, in particular on the S&P and the NASDAQ. So we're still lower on the S&P and NASDAQ. The Dow, though, the outperformer, and it's just off its highs of the session, but not huge moves, although tech getting beaten up a little bit.
Yeah, it is. Consumer discretionary as well, thanks to Tesla being significantly lower. I'm watching the range here. Because what in the S&P 500, at least,
the it's range trading, of your EV?
Yeah, range anxiety.
Yeah.
The range of the S&P 500 as far as where it's traded today, it's relatively narrow. I mean, just about trading between, you know, up and down 6/10%, all negative. But
I think
given what
know,
we saw the last 3 days, not significant.
No, exactly. We've seen some really big swings in either direction, depending on what's going on with COVID, the Omicron variant, what the thinking is in terms of market psychology when it comes to the Fed. I think it's safe to say that at this point, I mean, the VIX, though, we're seeing a bit of a bump up, 1.4 points higher today, 21.31, though, still low if you think about it on a historical basis. But I think it's really safe to say that because of the inflation report tomorrow and then the Fed meeting, we're going to see investors to some extent market time. Why not? Why not wait to see what kind of clarity we get out of the Fed?
Well, let's see what kind of clarity we get from Hillary Kramer, president and chief investment officer at ANG Capital Research, also the author of Game Changer Investing, How to Profit from Tomorrow's Billion-Dollar Trend. She joins us on the phone from Mexico. Hillary, how are you?
Very good, Tim. Nice to speak with you today.
Hey, great.
You're doing better than us.
Yeah.
You're in Mexico.
How's Mexico?
We're not.
Well, Mexico is actually very interesting because the labor here is extremely cheap. It's just, you know, unbelievable because I've spent a lot of time in Mexico. I was involved with building the Toluca toll road many years ago, and it's kind of shocking. And then I went to Walmart. Because we had a lawsuit case, and I couldn't get over that it's much more expensive than in the United States. And I give Walmart kudos for their, it must be artificial intelligence when they've figured out exactly how to price. And so I'm still doing my store checks and still working even down here.
That's good to hear. Okay. So, Hillary, I want to get your thoughts on what Carol and I were talking about and trying to make sense of after a three-day rally, really what we're seeing today, the S&P 500 trading in kind of a narrow range, and really the underperformers, the NASDAQ and Russell 2000.
That's right. It's really the Russell 2000, that is just looking really, really like getting destroyed. You know, it had a respite and it's going down fast. Look, we have a lot of pressures. We have the property situation in China and the concern about a default in China. Okay. We have the whole issue of, let's say, software stocks, for example, that look to be already peaked. We have retail down 11%. XRT since early November, which bodes very poorly given that we're in the holidays. And we have all this pressure on the Fed. Okay, the CPI tomorrow is what it's really all about. If we have another hot CPI, the political pressure from the consumer, puts the Fed in a very, very difficult situation.
Well, and it's interesting because we just had David Westin catching up with Brian Moynihan, Bank of America CEO, and he did talk about reining in inflation is going to be the hard work, but he also talked about consumer spending is up more than 20% versus 2019, so that's above pre-pandemic levels. The consumer is really strong. I scratched my head with so many people. What was the headline? 22 million Americans have quit.
More than 24.
In
just a matter of months.
From April to September of this year have just quit the labor force. Where are Americans getting this money? Has so much really been saved up during the pandemic? Because we know those government programs are coming to an end or have come to an end.
Well, that's exactly the point, Carol. You really hit on it. Everyone has become, and I say everyone, I'm talking about the everyday investor, everyday person has become so used to the entitlement that came out of necessity, of course. I mean, that was a lifesaver when they came, but everyone became used to a certain lifestyle, and now you have companies that, companies can't fill jobs. They just can't fill jobs, and people aren't going back into the workforce, which is why it circles right back to the Fed and how ridiculous it is. I know that they're bringing it to an end, but how can the Fed be buying $120 billion a month of bonds when you have all of these people who aren't working and you have all this consumer pressure and costs going through the roof?
Right.
And people are spending, and that's creating more of the demand, and they've made money in the market.
Hey, Hillary, I want to get your thoughts on
a lot of it's a stock market rally. I mean, that's trillions of dollars that we've seen.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Apple, because that's a company that you say is priced for growth. We're on $3 trillion watch right now. Why are you bullish on Apple?
Apple tied it all up. They're really brilliant. I used to think of a hardware company, and hardware companies always have a demise in the end, but it's not. Apple figured it out. So their software, their hardware, they own it all. And now that Apple has migrated and taken over businesses, right? That was the last, that was really where they had to go, and they did it. The pandemic took them over the edge, and companies have gone to Apple. And there was so much resistance, as we know, for years regarding that.
Are you talking about Apple Pay in particular? Or what are you talking about?
Apple Pay hasn't made it the way it is. When you think about, PayPal out there and Venmo and Zelle and what they've done, but Apple Pay will find a way.
But what do you mean? What do you mean people like during the pandemic have found Apple and have gone over to Apple? What do you mean? Just real quickly, just got about 20 seconds.
Because they had to go virtual, and when faced with the decision and the choice, right, they went to Apple, and companies, big companies that were all networked for, computer PCs, they went to Apple. And they had to, because it was all interconnected with the handheld devices.
Right.
So Apple just forced them into it, right? When that BlackBerry died, I don't think many people realized that you could put all your money into Apple and you could become a billionaire really in a matter of years.
All right, Hillary, we've got to run. Thank you so much. Hillary Kramer, she's President and Chief Investment Officer at A&G Capital Research, on the phone from Mexico.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.